welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. And before I continue, I would just like to take a moment to thank you for all of the listens and for all the comments from last week's episode featuring our show voice, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed for Senate campaign volunteer and great friend Jessica Shepherd last week. It was fantastic having Jess in the Michigan Premier Progressive Podcast studios in the attic here in mid-Michigan. And I just wanted to note that over the past 365 days, Left of Lansing's listenership has increased 97%. 97%. Let me please give you a round of applause for that one. And that's without anyone paying me some $1,500 to amp up their campaign. Haley Stevens. I have no party backing. I have no corporate backing. That'll never happen. No millionaires or billionaires are backing this campaign. It's essentially you who are making this show what it is, what it was, and what it shall be. And it is you who are helping spread the progressive message to others across Michigan and the nation. But if you would like to just stop by and maybe just give a $5 donation, you can do that by visiting the Left of Lansing Patreon page. That's patreon.com/leftoflansing. But you know what else those numbers are telling me? That the working class is ready for some change, ready to change the political system that has ignored them for far too long. A working class that's ready to punish not just the Trump regime and the MAGA Republicans for hurting their lives and their families, but that's ready to punish corporate establishment Democrats for also treating them like suckers and always capitulating to fascism. It's a working class that's ready to upend the political system, both in Lansing and across the country. And we see a great example of that happening here in Michigan when the State Board of Canvassers last week determined there were enough signatures to put Michiganders for Money Out of Politics petition, otherwise known as Mop Up Michigan, on the ballot. Now, hold on. I know. Before we get too ahead of ourselves, the same Board of Canvassers will now have to vote on the petition's language. So there's still a bit to go here, but it is a great, great start. And we have to mention that volunteers received over 500,000 signatures, which is well over the amount that was needed. And by the way, I just wanted to say this real quick too. Last week, I told Jessica Shepherd that it is because of her why movements really get going. And she tried to downplay it, but it's true. Volunteers with campaigns or volunteers for petition initiatives, they're the ones who really get the ball rolling in efforts to help the working class. So we have to thank all of the volunteers out there. That's one reason why I am doing this podcast, is to help you find ways to not only connect with other progressives across Michigan, but also to contribute your time or your money or your efforts in helping progressive candidates or progressive causes, or working class candidates or working class causes like Mop Up Michigan. Now, big corporate groups are opposing the Mop Up Michigan proposal, and they are trying to put up a big fight. And they did during that Board of Canvassers meeting, and they were able to get some signatures tossed away. And I'm sorry, I just have to say this, though, but if someone puts down some wrong information on a petition sheet, you know, maybe like their address. I don't know. Maybe they put in the wrong zip code. What does it matter? As long as the voter is on the voting rolls, isn't that all that matters? I digress, though. Still, Mop Up Michigan volunteers went way over the threshold just in case such challenges would arise. And that's why they had just enough signatures. But it does speak to me how many working class Michiganders are really done with this old system in which corporations doing business in Michigan can continue to just out and out bribe our elected officials. if you need a reminder, okay, if you need a reminder, Mop Up Michigan or Michiganders for Money Out of Politics would bar utility companies and government contractors from making campaign contributions. This will send shockwaves throughout the corporate class and the Epstein class here in Michigan. It would also, by the way, I think send shockwaves across the country, because this would essentially ban DTE and Consumers Energy from making campaign contributions here in Michigan. In Lansing, DTE has given money to 93% of the state legislators. 93%. That's appalling. How's that representing the working class? No wonder over 500,000 voters put their name on the Mop Up Michigan petition. It's no wonder. Now, I'll remind everyone how nearly 400,000 DTE customers lost their power during some intense summer storms in early July. I mean, it's not as if this is a rare occurrence for millions of working class Michiganders, especially those living in the southern third of the state. I mean, it seems like whenever there's a stiff breeze, consumers lose their power. So I went back and found this report from WDIV Channel 4 in Detroit, in which it said, oh, and this was from last fall. This report said, a new report published by the Citizens Utility Board of Michigan found that Michigan ranked among the worst in the nation out of all 50 states in terms of energy reliability. And the 2025 performance report found that Michigan ranked 51st out of the 50 states and the District of Columbia in the Customer Average Interruption Duration Index, a measure of the average time to power restoration. And on average, in Michigan, it took around 12 hours to restore power after an outage, over twice as long as in any other neighboring state. With that kind of track record, not to mention the hundreds of thousands of upset DTE customers earlier this month, maybe it's no wonder that Michigan Democratic Senate candidate, Congresswoman and Miss APAC Haley Stevens is doing all she can to say that she really doesn't take DTE campaign contributions. And even if she did in the past, it doesn't really matter. Here she was after her debate against her working class progressive opponent in the Senate primary, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, in which she was pressed by a Detroit News reporter as to her acceptance of DTE cash. Just listen to this.
Yeah, he asked specifically about the Senate race.
It was transferred to your Senate committee, I believe.
Yeah, he just asked about my current campaign. Yeah, Sam, did you have something?
Will you take donations from consumers and DTE?
I'm running to beat Mike Rogers, you know, and you heard tonight my opponent, you know, make all these wild accusations talking about how employee monies that come from corporations are the root of the problem, except I'm leading the charge to take on DTE right now. I am leading the charge to say that you are screwing over your ratepayers, and I am going to strip your federal funds and force you to cut executive pay. I think that is damn good for the people of Michigan and what they need right now.
Thank you. You're not answering.
Look, I'm trying to get to the United States Senate. Like, you can keep pushing me. I have no idea, you know, if we're going to be able to do these major reforms, but wait.
A real working class fighter. As Beth LeBlanc and her Detroit News colleague Craig Mauger reported after this week's debate, federal disclosures show that Haley Stevens' Senate campaign did receive $2,500 from DTE's main PAC on March 24th, 2025 for the current election cycle. The money was apparently transferred from her U.S. House Committee records show, but the donation was made a month before Stevens launched her Senate campaign. So the money was transferred from her U.S. House Committee to her Senate campaign. And she's really trying her best to distance herself from that, which is strange since Haley Stevens hasn't denounced how much money she's received in the past from corporate PAC money like DTE or Blue Cross and Blue Shield or from others, that she is now suddenly trying to hide the fact that her campaign is laced with DTE bribe money. Perhaps we might know something many in her inner circle are noticing. Michiganders don't like DTE or Consumers Energy, the utility monopolies here in the state. They don't like him one bit. And, of course, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed has not accepted any corporate PAC money, which includes DTE. More on the Senate race here in just a few moments. But back to DTE and power outages. The company this week blamed these outages on unpredictable weather. Huh. So, you know, with climate change bringing more dangerous weather to Michigan, this certainly sounds like a great time to start inviting big tech bros and their energy-sucking and job-sucking hyperscale AI data centers to Michigan, doesn't it? Remember, DTE didn't pay any federal taxes for the 12th straight year, while it was also seeking a nearly 10% rate hike on customers. Ah, and don't forget, Governor Gretchen Whitmer's energy regulators called the Michigan Public Service Commission granted DTE over $1 billion in revenue increases. $1 billion. Hey, the revolving door of government and corporate lobbyists. It's a beautiful thing in Lansing and in D.C., isn't it? Governor Whitmer, by the way, she's a Democrat. Just want to remind you on that. Governor Whitmer's Energy Commission is also busy greenlighting these hyperscale AI data centers. And it just recently okayed a costly and dangerous project to build a tunnel around that 70-year-old Line 5 oil pipeline, so that way a Canadian oil company can continue to transport its crude oil under the Straits of Mackinac, so that way it can reach its final destination back into Canada. That revolving door. But it's apparently wrong to point out how Gretchen Whitmer's been selling out the working class for corporate profits ever since she endorsed her fellow corporate establishment Democrat and friend, Haley Stevens. I know, I better be careful. I might be labeled a misogynist by AIPAC and by AIPAC's friends. Across Michigan, we are witnessing the working class in southern Michigan and northern Michigan and in central Michigan standing up against these hyperscale AI data centers. Data centers that are being pushed into their communities without any oversight and especially without any transparency. And remember, several Democrats in the state legislature, both in the state House and the state Senate, at the end of 2024, at the end of their government trifecta power, voted to grant these big tech bro authoritarians exemptions on sales and use taxes during construction of these data centers. Rather than actually doing something for the working class, they decided to do more for the billionaire big tech bros. Progressive Democrat and good friend of the show, State Representative Dylan Wagella, who voted against that bill, has proposed a bill reversing those tax breaks. And for his part, Dr. Abdullah Syed, in his Senate campaign, has not only called for a guarantee of local jobs if these data centers are built, but he's also called for public ownership of AI companies. Now that's a biggie, and that's one that I am backing big time. I do wish, though, that he would call for a moratorium on hyperscale AI data centers. Now, his counterpart, Haley Stevens, assures us that despite receiving thousands in campaign bribes from DTE, which says, by the way, it'll be able to provide power to these data centers while it continues to fail to keep the lights on if another Detroit Tiger swings and misses from the plate, Haley Stevens says campaign bribes from DTE will not prevent her from ensuring that working class Michiganders are not going to get screwed. Okay. You see, the working class has already been getting screwed. So what's the grand strategy here? I mean, with Gretchen Whitmer touting AI data center construction, despite the anger that these data centers are fueling across the state, Democrats continue to be in danger of losing yet another issue to the working class. And it's something I talked about with progressive congressional candidate for Michigan's 7th District, William Lawrence, on the show here back in June. Listen. Democratic leaders who just are not getting it. And I'm actually talking about Michigan Democratic Party leaders. Do you think that they are misreading how much the public is really against all of these big tech bro billionaire data centers?
Yes. Instead, they like to lecture to us. Mm. They lecture to us and they say, don't you know that this is going to be a great thing? And people just don't believe it. People do not believe it. Don't you know that this is going to be a great thing? No, we don't know because we haven't seen it in the past and we're not seeing it now. So there have to be a much stronger level of like binding commitments to community benefits and benefits for the working class in order for people to trust that this stuff is actually going to work out in their favor. And I think the Democrats are in major risk right now of ending up on the wrong side of this issue at the state level. There's already the matter that, you know, these tax breaks for data centers were passed under the Democratic House and Senate a couple of years ago. But now we're finding that, you know, the governor remains a very strong proponent of these kinds of plans. Our gubernatorial nominee, Jocelyn Benson, soon to be the nominee, you know, is definitely conflicted on these issues. And I'm very concerned, actually, that the Republicans are going to end up on the side of the people on this data center issue, and the Democrats are going to end up a little bit split or wavering or confused on it.
Yeah, that's my fear, too, as well, Will. You know,
there's one more thing on that poll.
Yeah,
I saw a poll that said that, you know, the poll was, do you trust big tech? And who are the ones who are driving all these data centers, of course. And the response was Democrats, only 20% out of 100 trusted big tech. Republicans, 20% out of Republican trusted big tech. That's an amazing statistic, because you do not see numbers like that in today's politics, where almost every issue ends up being polarized along partisan lines. So that data really reflected what we're all seeing on the ground, which is there is a genuinely cross-partisan rebellion against big tech data centers and AI that is prompted from the bottom up and is truly a bipartisan phenomenon.
By the way, a new global strategy group poll has progressive William Lawrence leading his primary race with 38%, while his corporate establishment opponents, Matt Masden, is at 27%, and former Ambassador Bridget Brink is wallowing at 19%. The corporate establishment really, really did want Bridget Brink to win, but then Masden was taking some of her thunder, and he even got the endorsement of Michigan's corporate centrist Senator Alyssa Slotkin the other day. So those two seem like they're kind of hurting each other. Meanwhile, Michigan's 7th congressional district is Slotkin's old seat, which is currently being held by MAGA Republican and Dear Leader Trump water boy Tom Barrett. Now, you heard William Lawrence warn Democratic Party officials how they're screwing up on the data center issue, and they are. William Lawrence has been a working class and a community organizer and activist in that area for many, many years. He's been showing up to these data center meetings in this district, including one proposed data center in Lansing, which was suspended a couple of months ago, thanks to the people standing up against that project, and thanks to also William Lawrence for always showing up. His opponents, Matt Masden and Bridget Brink, were never to be found for these data center meetings. Look, I know we've been focusing on Michigan's Democratic Senate race for a good amount of time here, but we've got some big races for the U.S. House and for the state legislature with big implications for the direction of the Democratic Party, the future direction of the Democratic Party. And there's going to be a loud working class roar if William Lawrence prevails in his primary race and becomes the Democratic nominee to take on Tom Barrett this fall. Trust me, the establishment did not want William Lawrence winning. But the people are saying differently. And speaking of Tom Barrett, he stood on stage with Dear Leader Trump, Congresswoman and resident dingbat Lisa McClain, and Florida Mike Rogers, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate earlier here this week in Michigan. But something happened, and I think some of you caught this with some of the news coverage, but something happened at that rally in front of Dear Leader. And what happened was a number of anti-data center protesters showed up to interrupt Dear Leader Trump's speech. And, you know, it was probably the first time Dear Leader got confronted on the issue, considering how he and the MAGA Republican Congress passed bills to grant large sums of corporate welfare to these big tech data bros so that way they could build their AI data center toys across the country, including here in Michigan. You see, this issue will be one of the top issues of the campaign, and it is just amazing that the progressive candidates in this primary, like William Lawrence, or like Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, or like Kyle Blomquist in the UP, are comprehending that anger. The rest of the elite corporate Democratic Party establishment ignores that anger, but tries to give lip service to protecting the working class. Yet, the corporate Democratic Party establishment, like Gretchen Whitmer, have given profiles and capitulation to the big tech bro authoritarians, to the Epstein class, and yes, to the fascist Trump regime. If corporate establishment Democrats really, really and truly want to understand why they're struggling to connect with the working class, look no further than to data centers. You're listening to LOL.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt, from Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free and check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Well, leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. You can follow me and contact me on my socials, such as Facebook, Twitter, and the Gram. And I have to give a shout out to Livingston County progressive and union fighter and activist and good friend of the show, Casey Helton, who tweeted this week about Miss APAC, Haley Stevens, constantly referring to Dr. Abdul Sayed as a podcaster during their final debate this past Monday night. And see, I take issue with that because we podcasters have feelings too. But it also shows how these corporate establishment Democrats still are not grasping the power of podcasting, how podcasting can reach a different audience and a different base of voters. Podcasting or digital or new media continue to make huge waves, and it shows why establishment Democrats are having a problem connecting with younger voters, for instance, and expanding their voter base. People like Haley Stevens just wants to deride them and make fun of them. They think just by going on MSNBC all the time, or is it MS Now, whatever, that's the way to really connect with people. No, podcasting is the best way. Digital or new media is also a good way. At least it's a different way. Maybe not the best, but a different way. And podcasting is just one way for progressives and working class Michiganders and Americans to find ways to connect with each other. For Haley Stevens to deride and demean podcasters shows what she thinks of those of us who are working to share viewpoints that aren't allowed on over-the-air media. And one more thing. By calling Dr. Abdul just a podcaster, Haley Stevens is basically erasing his professional accomplishments of becoming a doctor, being a former health director for Wayne County and more. And Casey Helton posted in response to Haley Stevens' podcasting charge by saying, if she's going to do the podcaster bit, then it's fair to say Haley was basically a glorified office secretary who made coffee and booked appointments for Obama and the big bosses during the auto rescue. Well, I mean, she's not wrong. Dr. Abdul would never say that, of course, but I don't think Casey is wrong there whatsoever. By the way, Casey Helton will be on the show to talk about the results of the elections and also what's next in the general election here in about 2 weeks. Now, I was thinking back this past weekend, when progressive activist and friend of the show, Julia Pulver, was on here last winter, and we were talking about protesting the ICE Gestapo after ICE murdered two American citizens in the streets of Minneapolis. And Julia said that she and other activists weren't going to back down. They weren't going to back down whatsoever, as they wanted to fight and protect the rights of undocumented citizens. And I remember when you saw working class Americans taking to the streets to protest ICE. But you know what? You weren't hearing that much from Democratic Party leaders in the state or on the federal level. We certainly didn't hear from Governor Whitmer as she capitulated towards the Trump regime ever since he won the election. We certainly didn't hear from Haley Stevens, who voted to thank ICE for its efforts and then visited the Baldwin ICE concentration camp to praise the female security guards for being such badass girl bosses. No, we saw people like Julia Pulver or like West Michigan activist Jeff Smith from GRID, or working class fighters in Romulus and countless others taking to the streets to provide resistance against ICE. But we failed to see Democrats, corporate establishment Democrats, show up at these protests. And I think one reason you're seeing progressives as well as Democratic socialists winning elections and defeating the establishment is because they're showing backbone and they are pushing back to make MAGA have to play defense once in a while. I remember talking with progressive congressional candidate Aisha Faruqi, who's going up against an establishment Democrat and pro-right-wing Israeli government candidate Jeremy Moss in the state's 11th congressional district. That's Haley Stevens' current seat. And Aisha Faruqi explained the reason why she decided to run for that U.S. House seat. And she said it was always to fight back against authoritarianism and to bring back the American dream.
You know, my family and I immigrated to this country for the freedoms that America represented to the rest of the world at the time. My mom was working on her PhD. She earned a scholarship to study at the University of Detroit Mercy. And while she was working, my dad worked for a small family business, which served the automotive supply industry. And my parents had every intention of going back to Pakistan, but they stayed because they believed that my sister and I would have opportunities in this country that no other nation could offer. And we were able to benefit from the American dream, right? But what has become apparent to us, to my sister and I, to me, is that the American dream no longer exists. And there are certain communities that have never really been able to reap the benefits of the American dream. And now more than ever, you really see people struggling, everyday people struggling. But another thing that really inspired me to run was my parents have lived under an authoritarian regime. And they've made comments like, oh my God, people are being disappeared. American citizens are being killed by masked ICE agents, and just watching our country descend into authoritarianism, I think that is what really inspired me to run for office.
Fighting against the Trump regime's authoritarianism and also fighting to restore what was once known as the American dream for every Michigander and American, that's why Democrats should be in this fight. If you aren't being populist and if you aren't calling for ICE to be abolished, then what the hell are you doing as a Democratic candidate? For whatever office. Ayesha Faruqi would be a remarkable addition to Congress in 2027. Plus, she also does not accept AIPAC money. But Ayesha's statement about the American dream being gone is why she's pushing, along with so many other progressive candidates, an America First agenda. An agenda that pushes for democracy, that pushes to hold the Epstein class accountable, that pushes to hold the Trump regime accountable, that pushes to bring back the American dream that's been hijacked by the corporate class, better known as the Epstein class. Apparently a class that you can never hold accountable for any wrongdoing. Being an American First, or being an America First progressive, or a working class candidate, is a winning strategy that we're seeing resonating with voters in Northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula. I mentioned Kyle Blomquist taking on the Democratic Party establishment pick there in the first congressional district of the UP. He's a proud Democratic socialist who's trying to bring back an America First, working class first agenda. He also does not accept AIPAC money. And then on the state government side, state Senate candidate Kelly Van Genhoven is trying to become the first Democrat in years and the first woman to represent the UP in Lansing. And don't forget, Kelly took on and defeated the MAGA majority on the Delta County Board of Commissioners and then won two elections. She doesn't hide her working class ideals. She's not ashamed of them. And she's making the working class her top priority in her state senate race, which is why she's going to be the nominee for the race after this coming Tuesday. And I remember when Kelly was on the show a couple of months ago, and I asked if she considered herself a progressive or something else. And here was her response, and it was pretty good. How would you describe yourself politically? Would you say you're populist? Would you say a progressive? Would you say mainstream Democrat? Centrist? How would you go about that?
Well, when it comes to social justice issues and, you know, the people, I'm very progressive. And the reason why I say I'm progressive, it's not a radical label. It's an essential label. I feel that our people are struggling with their housing. I feel that people are struggling with their health care. I feel that people are struggling with their mental health care. I feel that our kids are struggling in our public school systems. And those are all people-centered things. I feel that our blue-collar workers are struggling right now, and I really want to build back our unions. Strong democratic unions and trade schools are so important. And so when I label myself as a progressive, I want to label it in such ways. I hate labels, first of all. But I will say that because I am so people-centered versus profit-centered, I can say that I'm definitely one of the more progressive candidates.
A working class candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't we all want a safe and good place to live at an affordable price? Don't we all want to be able to see a doctor when we need help and something's broken? Don't we all want to be able to have a resource for therapy or psychiatric care if our minds are hurting or broken? Don't we all want our kids to be in safe infrastructure when they go to their schools and have teachers who are knowledgeable and not having to work a second job to make it by? Don't we all want to have like a living wage where we can, you know, promote our unions and build back our middle class? Like, those to me are essential. They're not radical. So I know a lot of people on the right hand side have put more of progressive candidates in a radical, I don't know, in a radical circle, I guess you could say, but I'm no such thing. I just want what's best for my people in the UP.
You see, Kelly Van Genhoven, or KVG, is just tired of working class Michiganders in the Upper Peninsula being overlooked. KVG is also tired of Democrats waving the white flag and refusing to fight for an area that used to be a blue part of the state. She said that she's a people-centered over a profit-centered candidate and just wants to make people's lives better. I mean, isn't that the whole point of getting into government? I mean, KVG is having fun campaigning and taking her working class message to the people. And I think that's the other part that the corporate establishment and the Democratic Party fail to realize. You should be excited to run to represent the working class and to improve the lives of your constituents. You shouldn't be hiding. You shouldn't be just counting on corporate donations to get you by. You should be excited to go out there, share your ideas, explain how you're going to move the Overton window back from the right over here to the left, and explain how you're just going to make their lives better. That's another reason why progressives are doing well. A new Quinnipiac poll shows that 49% of America reports doing worse off today than they were a year ago. 49%. Just 34% say they're doing better, but I'm not sure there's that many in the billionaire Epstein class. So I'm thinking some of that is just MAGA saying, yeah, everything's great. With a failing economy, no end in sight of stopping the Iran war, leaving farmers out to dry, and continually losing elections, going the middle way. Well, going the middle way has failed not just Democrats, but it's failed our democracy and it's failed our working class. Going the middle way doesn't present a real contrast, and just saying you won't be as bad as MAGA Republicans is not a winning strategy. It's surrender and it's a losing cause. Progressives are running people-centered over profit center campaigns everywhere, and it's why they're making up ground the Democratic Party establishment lost. You're listening to LOL.
Bringing progressivism with passion each and every week. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd also like to thank Audioboom for publishing the show and helping us spread our populist, progressive, and patriotic message. Speaking of which, let's get back to the show with Pat.
Okay, before we have this week's last call, let's go with this week's LOL web poll. This week's question is the following. Is the Michigan Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate between Abdul al-Sayed and Haley Stevens a national proxy fight on where the Democratic Party should be headed? Yes or no? Vote on patreon.com/leftoflansing or on Left of Lansing's YouTube page or on our Twitter page. Also, this coming primary night on August the 4th, that's Tuesday, August the 4th, I will be hosting around a 1 hour live Left of Lansing on our YouTube page. So I'll be on live. You'll be able to add some commentary, maybe even join us and help break a little news. Maybe you're seeing something that's happening with races across the state. And we'll be able to share them on the YouTube live video again on Tuesday, primary night, August the 4th. Just go to YouTube/Left of Lansing. You'll find me there. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. All right, well, to piggyback off the Left of Lansing a weekly poll, I'd like to talk about not only the implications of the Democratic Senate race here in Michigan, but also some other races across the state and what that'll mean for the direction of the Democratic Party. So a well-known leftist commentator and influencer named Ali O'Brien posted the following on social media this week, and I'd like to share it with you. Ali said, if Abdul al-Sayed wins a massive swing state, it'll be proof that the Zoran only works in New York City argument is BS. That's why AIPAC is so afraid. Hard to argue against that point, and it's why the corporate establishment of the Democratic Party, I think, decided to make this race a proxy fight for the entire nation. That's why Haley Stevens really wasn't out there campaigning with the people until recently. Oh, I know she made some appearances here and there, but let's face it, she never did any big-time speeches in front of hundreds and thousands of people. But once Abdullah Sayyid's campaign really began to take off sometime around the spring, the establishment seemed caught off guard, caught flat-footed again, kind of like they did during the first couple of months of the Trump regime, if you recall. The establishment just failed to grasp how working-class, Democratic-based voters were irate and are irate at how much their country is being taken over by fascists, how there was little pushback by Democrats against the ICE Gestapo, and how there was just capitulation and acquiescence to the billionaire big tech bros and their data centers. Not to mention how inflation remained high, people couldn't afford or were losing their Medicare or health insurance, people can't afford homes anymore, and how there was little pushback against Israel's and the Trump regime's war on Iran. Very little. So the establishment decided to fall back on a few tired strategies that, hey, you know, let's be honest, have worked well in the past. First, the Stevens campaign welcomed itself to be awash in corporate campaign cash, to have a major financial advantage over the progressive Democrat Abdullah Sayyid. We've seen that in so many races over the past decade, and it's worked for the establishment. And second, the Stevens campaign relied on the tired establishment argument of electability. And again, in this Senate race, we have been hearing how electability is important. But once elected, all right, let's just look at it this way. Once elected, Alyssa Slotkin, in her first year as Michigan senator, voted to confirm Kristi Noem for the head of the Homeland Security, as well as several other of the Trump regime's nominees. She voted to pass the Lincoln-Riley Act, voted to block California from enacting a strict EV mandate. Something to think about as, you know, we were just recently breathing in Canadian wildfire smoke. Alyssa Slotkin failed to provide a strong anti-war message, continued to accept AIPAC money while refusing to hold Israel accountable for its war crimes, and decided to go on some campaign push touting how the middle way could really go on to defeat fascism. Oh, but Slotkin wouldn't call it fascism, and she didn't really like it when we used words like the oligarchy or phrases and ideas such as Medicare for all. Slotkin barely won her race against Florida Mike Rogers in 2024, but this is who the Democratic Party establishment pushed out there as their response to Trump. Meanwhile, we watched as a Democratic socialist won the New York City mayoral race, that being Zoran Mamdani, and he did it by bringing the working class around a message of simply making government work for the people again and not just for the billionaires. And I'll be darned, he won and remains popular in New York City, remains popular around the country, and more popular than the Israeli criminal Bibi Netanyahu. But we were told it was just a New York City phenomenon. It was just a fad. And there's no way that kind of politics translates to middle America. Well, that AIPAC has spent some $50 million in this state to attack Abdullah Sayyid's Senate race in Michigan. That tells me otherwise. And you have to ask yourselves, why the hell is Israel so interested in Michigan's Senate race? Israel, Iran war, gas prices, fertilizer prices, tariffs, grocery prices, data centers, abolishing ICE, and taking on corporations while fighting for the working class and unions. This is why Abdullah Sayyid's campaign is garnering a large amount of excitement and getting a large amount of voters here in the state, and that's why AIPAC is sending out gross mailers accusing him of being misogynist, something that fact-checkers from Bridge, Michigan reported that the accusations simply don't back up the claims that he disrespects women. It's nothing but a hit job by AIPAC. And again, why is AIPAC so concerned with a primary race for the U.S. Senate in Michigan? Why? The reason so many establishment figures have come out to endorse Haley Stevens is because they are realizing they're not only losing touch with the working class, but more importantly, they're losing power within the Democratic Party. So if Abdullah Sayyid does win the Senate primary this coming Tuesday in a supposed swing state like Michigan, the establishment's argument of electability and of progressive politics working only in blue cities like New York is vanquished for good. Oh, they'll try to tell you otherwise, but you know better.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. I'm going to provide you with a link from a post by a fantastic political, polemic, social author and commentator named Sarah Kendzior. Some of you probably know of her. And on her Substack this week, she wrote about how Gen X, my generation, was right all the time about quicksand, even if we really didn't exactly know why to be afraid of the quicksand. See, let me just tell people who might be a little younger, in every TV show in the 70s and early 1980s, it seemed like quicksand was everywhere. It really did, including, you know, right outside your front door. I mean, seriously, that was a big time TV trope, and it scared the hell out of us as kids. But you see, as Sarah writes, the quicksand for us wasn't Cold War, wasn't the Cold War, or it wasn't nukes. It was the quicksand of the Epstein class, the big tech bros, and their artificial intelligence, and the constant war, whether it's against Iraq in one decade or Iran in the next. That's the quicksand that we should be fearing. Unfortunately, some of my generation, though, still aren't getting it. And it's sad because we are losing our identity, and artificial intelligence, according to Ms. Kendzior, is just a way for us to lose or surrender our sense of identity and self. And she writes, people are giving up on being human. It's too hard. The filters that hide faces are made from scars. That's the meat of AI technology. Scraped flesh from fellow humans, molded until it's unrecognizable, slick like plastic skin. No record of pain means no accountability. No ownership of words means no proof. We are told that to acknowledge the scars, to grieve the wound, is to be left behind. The people diving headfirst into the quicksand embrace this philosophy. The rest of us hide our scars for other reasons. We are afraid they'll take them away. Those inquiries, those injuries, are our evidence. I read that and thought of a song that came out some 14 years ago by the indie artist named Santa Gold, and the song was called Disparate Youth. And, you know, you have to remember that this song came out as Gen X and millennials were dealing with the aftermath of the financial crash and the repercussions of the Iraq War and also of 9/11. And the national security state. And in the chorus of that song, Santa Gold says, well, we said our dreams will carry us, and if we don't fly, we will run. Now we push right past to find out how to win what they all lost. For me, those words never left because we've been told to put our trust into the very serious people, be it political and corporate elites. And yeah, you know what? Media elites as well. In the end, they all led us into the quicksand. But we can run and push right past to find out how to win back everything that they lost. That's how I'm thinking. That's my thought process heading into Tuesday's primary election. It's time to get out of the quicksand. We'll talk next week to share the results of Tuesday's elections. And don't forget to join me on YouTube on election night at 9 p.m. for some live discussion of the results. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.